This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, every Friday at this time, we recap the bad takes of the week. Not ours, but of other people. Yeah.
As if we could find enough to fill out a segment, bad takes of ours.
It's our great takes that allow us to sit in this ivory tower and laugh at all the peons with their poor takes out there.
That's right.
Yeah. So we do this every Friday at 9 o'clock. We call it Take-A-Mania because we have a champ who's got the belt, and he's had the belt for a long time. This guy is having a major, major title run with this strap right now. Angelo Cataldi, former Philadelphia radio host. Ben, do we have the abridged version of this with just the... The only part we need is about the last 30 seconds or so. As long as we get the final line in, people will understand why Angelo Cataldi has held this belt for as long as he has with the what was the worst take of the week 2 months ago. But yeah. there have been some formidable challengers the last few weeks. Seth is the ultimate judge on this. I'm just the booker. I just bring, you know, I'm just the talent scout. I find the talent. Seth books the matches here and decides who wins and who loses.
That's why I'm going to give the final judgment on Draft Day, the movie, this weekend.
That's right.
As well.
Yes. Judge and
jury. Sean just admires and respects my critical eye for these things.
On everything, yes.
Yes.
So here is the, if you haven't listened to this segment before, here's the reigning defending champion, Angelo Cataldi.
The all-time fraud of American sports is Andy Reid.
Okay, so that was like the last 5 seconds of it.
Yeah. Not just saying he's overrated, but the all-time fraud in American sports is Andy Reid's reputation.
Yeah. It's a minute-long rant that we've played 7-8 straight weeks now. We want to make sure we get to the other ones. His take is that Andy Reid is the all-time fraud in American sports, and he's got a personal axe to grind because he covered Andy Reid in Philadelphia for a number of years. All those things. All right. So here are the challengers, Seth, 1 through 4. I'm going to start with Emmanuel Acho of FS1. He's on one of the debate shows on there. And he had this take about why the Tennessee Titans should draft Shedeur Sanders with the number one overall pick.
I'm taking Shedeur Sanders. We all say Shedeur Sanders is a winner everywhere he goes.
Yes.
That's not exclusively true.
No.
Shedeur Sanders and Deion are winners everywhere they go. I would take Shedeur Sanders to make sure that I have the first stab at getting Deion Sanders as my next head coach in Tennessee, assuming Callahan does not work out. The Titans have had 5 head coaches since 2010. You know Deion would inevitably leave Colorado for one reason and one reason only, to coach his son. If you can get Shedeur, who you think you're going to get as the next head coach? And you don't even have to come in here with a whole lot of different leverage and negotiation tactics. Just show him a picture of the quarterback, and it's Shedeur. Shedeur doesn't necessarily win everywhere he goes. We don't know that. That's not conclusive information. Shedeur and Deion win everywhere they go. I would get Shador because I want to get Prime, because if you get Shador and you get Prime, you completely revolutionize the whole NFL as it pertains to the Tennessee Titans.
Okay, similar
That's
to,
why I'm going for
similar
Shador.
To Cataldi, it was the very end for me, Seth, that puts him in this match with Cataldi. You're gonna revolutionize the NFL with these.
Right,
two.
Right. Based on the premise that they win everywhere they go. Okay, they won it. It was impressive what he did with Jackson State, but that also included having guys who are power five caliber players, especially Travis Hunter at Jackson State. And then you went to Colorado, and they didn't win championships. They turned the program around.
Right. Right.
Like, that's impressive.
Yeah.
But it's not. Let's spend the next hour and a half going over the coaches and players who won everywhere they went in high school and college and then didn't translate to the NFL. You know why this bothers me the most? Because I had to live through playing professional football in Florida when people were convinced. I had to listen to people on sports radio in Jacksonville say that, hey, Coughlin and Brunel might be all right, but if you get Steve Spurrier and Danny Werfel in here,
that's this.
They've shown what they can do.
Boy, that
and
is.
I don't know. I can't imagine how excited they were about getting Urban Meyer in there because he wins everywhere. He legitimately won everywhere he went.
Yes.
When Urban Meyer was in college.
And turned things around everywhere he went. He inherited
nothing.
Yeah,
so that somehow turning around Jackson State and turning around Colorado, but not winning at all or anything is somehow evidence that, like, oh, you're going to revolutionize things by going to the NFL.
All right.
I reject everything about everything he just said.
And yet, does he take down Angelo Cataldi for the worst take in Take-A-Mania?
Boy, Acho's got a good shot at it. I got to think on this. I got to listen to the other candidates.
You got to listen to the other ones. Okay, yeah. Well, you got to decide now because we need a champ. Okay, so all four of these are getting. I like it when the guy gets the belt, and then he's got to be worse than Acho. Yeah.
All right. It's still he's dealing in hypotheticals, and he's getting out way over his skis.
Okay.
I'd like to revisit this after Shador's rookie year. So he does not take down Cataldi.
Take down Cataldi. Okay, that's fine. Really close, though. I mean, that is a kick out at the very last second by Cataldi. I'm with you. That's
You've got a
battle.
Chance to revolutionize the sport. All right. Yeah, drafting a father-son, basically. That's the way I want to revolutionize sports.
I feel like there's a second referee getting ready to run out and let Acho try to pin him again.
I don't know. There's so many things about that little line of reasoning where I'm like, what part of revolutionizing the sport has anybody ever dreamed of, like, oh, nobody's ever thought of this, a father-son duo? Like, oh, what the hell are we even doing here?
Okay, I mean, I feel like you want Acho to have a second shot at this thing. I'll keep moving if you want me to.
Yeah, keep moving.
Keep moving, all right. This is Dave Portnoy, founder of Barstool, and Boston Red Sox fan, I should point out, on the proliferation of the torpedo bat.
Hundreds of years of baseball. You try to a pitcher get the ball in on the hands, that's a good pitch. Anthony Volpe, who stinks and is a Yankee, they said they researched his swing. Guess what? They researched it. They found out he stinks. He keeps hitting the ball on the hands, and they altered the bat. Stuart, you're a soccer guy. What if you have a player of yours who stinks, and every time he kicks it, it's a muffin, right? No speed, no nothing. You develop a cleat, a shoe that has turbo boosters in it. Does that mean he's better? Do you want to keep the game sacred? So this is nothing to do with the Yankees, but we don't need these Godzilla bats infiltrating the national pastime.
Now, the delivery is very funny. I will give you that. Godzilla bats is pretty funny. Portnoy's really good.
The problem is he's invoking the 100-plus years of baseball, which has included so many changes to bats over and over again, time and time again. And the fact that players were using this bat last year, and it's not like only some players are going to be allowed to use the bats. Anybody who damn well chooses can use the torpedo bats.
Yes.
And the notion that somehow changing the shape of the bat, which has been done hundreds and hundreds of times in the history of baseball, is somehow going to ruin the game of baseball. It's a really bad take. I don't know. There's just something about Cataldi, and it's Cataldi's delivery that made it so magnificently bad that I don't know. I can't. This is a bad take by Portnoy, but no, I can't.
Not bad enough.
Cover!
Unbelievable.
Okay, we got two more. Cataldi is standing up again. Cataldi is like Seth Payne's Hulk Hogan, man. Seth Payne is Vince McMahon, and Cataldi is Hulk Hogan. And they are
maybe I'm giving too much respect because he's old.
Yeah, maybe, maybe. All right, last two. Bill Simmons. I think Bill Simmons' voice alone might get Seth to take down the champ. This is Bill Simmons saying that Houston, the Rockets, are fun to watch, but they're a move away.
I just feel like Houston, when I watch them, as good as the record's been, and I've enjoyed them, and I think they're in the running for league pass MVPs this year. I
awesome.
Feel like they're a year away. They're a move away, and I don't... The move probably involves Şengün or Green, but they don't have that, like, I got this guy in offense, which is why the Booker option would have been so interesting for them. I don't know what they do, but don't you think, like, 1 year from now, I'm really interested to see where they are.
Yeah, Devin Booker is who he's talking about.
The Şengün or Green part is the one that, like, just kind of casually, like, it's probably Şengün or Green. It's an annoying Bill Simmons take, but it's not a horrendous, horrendous.
Some of these I put in here knowing they're not going to win, but I hate that take. I hate that it's got to involve Green or Şengün. And I'm somebody who was probably as amped up to move on from Jalen Green before the season as anybody else. Even though his contract is not a max or a long-term deal, I felt like the 3 years, $100 million. I'm like, I'll wait and see how this goes. I am skewing way more towards being wrong about Jalen Green than I was right about Jalen. Jalen Green's had a really good season this year.
Bill Simmons, we need to reserve for football season because that's when his truly horrendous takes come out.
Okay.
He's so bad. He's just horrendous on football.
Yeah.
Baseball, whether you love or hate him and what he says about basketball, excuse me.
Yeah.
That's his dojo, at least.
Yes.
Where football is where he really gets out over his skis. So we'll, can you put the Acho and the Portnoy take at the very least in kind of an all-star category?
Sure, sure.
So when we revisit this, we'll probably take a hiatus from it for a little while.
Yeah.
But sometime at the end of the year, there is an all-star group, and those two are they're in the running for all-stars.
Okay, yeah, we'll keep that. Yeah. And I would say if we were making an all-star team, Portnoy, Acho, what was the one that almost took down...
The injured Duke player who the announcer said his parents...
Corey Alexander.
Corey Alexander's parents were more concerned about the outcome of the game than their son's mangled leg.
Than Cooper Flagg's leg. Yeah. And the other one that got me that I would personally, if you'll let me put something in the all-star category, you're the judge and jury on this thing, but the coach Jason Brown one last week about the manager from McNeese State where he just thought it was ridiculous that he's getting paid to carry a boombox around NIL money when, in fact, you're getting paid to dog cuss him by BetUS. Your lot in life is no less absurd than Amir Khan's lot in life, okay?
Yeah. Those are some of my favorite skits on people making fun of podcasters who like give an impassioned plea or something and then roll right into the live read or whatever. We do it all the time, but it's especially like the people who have podcasts about creating a better life for yourself, and they go immediately into an ad for whiskey or something.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, that's a good irony. All right, last one. This is Sean Bajani on Area 45. Saying he could whoop your ass, Seth.
I say this with all due respect. I would whoop Seth's ass. Let's go right now. Like Sunday, boxing ring, baseball field, put the football player out there, put the wannabe out there, and let's go at it. I would whoop Seth's ass, and I would not listen to him try to talk me out of it.
Called you a wannabe? Put the football player out there like you're some lumbering.
You wouldn't listen to me trying to talk him out of it. You know, that sounds like an episode of Reacher. You ever see Reacher?
I've never seen Reacher.
Oh, Reacher is this badass dude who can just, he's got incredible fighting skills and everything. And I've never watched an episode, but I see clips all the time. And it's always him trying to talk a group of kids out of attacking him or something.
Okay.
And then he's like, seriously, you don't want to do this. I promise you don't want to do this. And all right, I guess I got to beat all of you up in 3 seconds. Yeah.
That's you. That would be.
Yeah,
you.
I mean, it's a bad take by Bajani, but it's also in the history and the tradition of promoting a fight or an event.
Yeah.
So he's doing what a boxer should, which is talking smack before a fight that's actually never going
to
happen.
He's trying to put butts in seats. I get it. So the butts in seats for the fight that's never going to happen? Question mark.
Yeah, I'm going reacher on this one.
Okay.
I'm really going to... I don't... Sean's got a child. He's got a wife who's lovely. He doesn't need this.
See, I like that when you go to he's got a family, because that would imply that he's going to suffer some permanent damage.
honestly could. I would... I mean, if he really could.
Yeah.
I don't want to... I could permanently damage him, and I'm not going to do that.
No. So, okay.
If I do the fight, I'm gonna go reacher on him.
Yeah,
you know.
Guys, move off of the old man Cataldi. Acho wins. That's a text message to the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line.
All right, we might have to do a special rematch.
Okay,
next week.
We could.
Let me sit and stew on Acho for a while.
Stew on Acho this weekend. I'm happy to do a rematch on Monday. We see that happen all the time in wrestling. You know, where it's an outcome, but it's a sketchy outcome. I don't know. We need a rematch. I'm willing to revisit that on Monday, because we'll talk about this in the next segment. Colorado's pro day is today. So who knows, man? Maybe Shador does his pro day thing and his stock drops. You know, it would make no sense for Tennessee to draft him because he was horrible against air at his pro day. Text message, Portnoy's point isn't even that bad. He's just saying if you hit the ball on the handle, you shouldn't be rewarded for it. I don't know.
Well, you're not rewarded for hitting the ball on the handle.
Volpe on the Yankees, he chooses to have the mass of his torpedo bat almost in on the hands.
Closer on the handle, But it is still, like, it's the shape of the bat has always been altered and tweaked based on player preferences, pitchers, like the live ball era changed it.
Yeah.
It's not as revolutionary a concept as it's being presented. It's the method with which that they're able to do it now is just, it's not, it's fine.
Okay.
Fine.
Acho wins by a mile. Text message, winning everywhere they go. They were 13-11 at Colorado. That's true. If you add up both years, they were, is it 13-11? I know they were 4-8 the first year, 9-3 the second year, and they lost in a bowl game, I think. Sounds about right.
It is true. There's so many things about it. Cataldi, at least, when he was taking down Andy Reid, he brought up some things that were factually correct, so that were misleading. Like they were, it was a non sequitur. He did the classic thing where you say a bunch of true things and then you throw your conclusion in there and people hear like, oh yeah, he said a bunch of true things, so the conclusion must be true. Whereas Acho just said a bunch of things that didn't make any sense at all.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So we'll revisit it. We'll revisit it on Monday. Bajani's catching some too. Seth doesn't knock out Bajani, Sean will at least be walking. Seth wouldn't just knock out Bajani. Sean will be walking funny for the rest of his life. all right, so keep texting in.
Acho. Yeah, Bajani's got nothing to gain from any of this. He's a good looking guy too. Like
he's got a pretty wife.
No more after this.
Pretty wife, nice kid, nice life. He's got a fun show with Patrick Creighton on weeknights. Why are you picking a fight? Why are you poking the bear, Bajani? And yet, way worse than Acho's take and Cataldi. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, Colorado Pro Day today. Seth asked a great question to Nick Caserio yesterday about Travis Hunter. The hypothetical with Travis Hunter, what did the Texans GM have to say about if he were a Texan, how would the Texans use Travis Hunter? We'll have that for you coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so Colorado has their Pro Day today. We just got done talking about Colorado after Emmanuel Acho's awful take on Shedeur Sanders and Deion Sanders possibly going to Tennessee. The pro day is today for Shedeur, Travis Hunter, and several other Colorado Buffaloes. All eyes will be on those two, though. Travis Hunter, and probably even more so Shedeur. I think everybody expects Travis Hunter to get drafted somewhere in the top 3 to 5 players in the draft. Shedeur is still all over the map. But it was Travis Hunter, Seth, that you asked Nick Caserio about yesterday, and this was interesting. You gave him a hypothetical. I like the way you laid it out for him. A hypothetical that has zero chance of happening. I think that put him at ease in answering honestly about the player. But basically just asked what Nick Caserio's scouting report was on Travis Hunter? What does he see him as, a cornerback?
What would he do with him? How would they handle him?
Yep, what would he do with him, cornerback or wide receiver?
I'm happy to talk about Hunter as a player.
Yeah.
He's a very uniquely skilled athlete. I would say he looks like his best position is going to be corner, but I think if you ask 32 different teams, they might have a different opinion. But like what he's done is, I mean, even going back to Charles Woodson, Woodson played on both sides of the ball, but not the volume with which Travis has played. But talk about, here's a player who essentially nobody was talking about probably 2 or 3 years ago, you know, because he was at, you know, Jackson State, and, you know, Coach Prime did a great job of getting him there. But what he did this year, I mean, it'd be hard-pressed to find another player probably in a near future that can duplicate what he's done. But I would say he looks like he's a better corner than he is a receiver. Not that he can't play receiver, but I mean, I would say he looks like corner. I mean, the way he plays the ball, attracts the ball, he's very unique.
I'll tell you honestly, the volume that he played with, it was 115 snaps per game, whatever it was on average. It's so crazy that he played at such a high level. Because that time on the sideline, you need it sometimes. You know, there's times after a long drive on defense where you're just flat out gassed. Wide receivers, you know, one of the things defensive backs in the NFL complain about is that wide receivers can run a couple of go routes and then they go get a blow on the sideline while the defensive back still has to be out there every single play. And it's astounding that he was able to do what he did. I think that I agree with Nick. I think the thing that makes the most sense is you bring him in as a defensive back, as a cornerback, and then and usually you do this with most positions, whether, you know, whether guys are playing both ways or not, you get them comfortable with their core skills, their core position and role, and then you see how much they can handle after that. So I bet whatever team takes him is going to be open to using him on offense. But they don't want to go into it saying like, oh, yep, day one, we're going to have him out there playing, you know, 95 snaps a game or 100 snaps a game. I think it's most likely he starts off as a cornerback and then that team will start using him in various packages along the way that as a receiver, and maybe they build on that over time.
I would guess that the team that's drafting him, I would guess teams looking at him are already they already have their offensive staff kind of getting a Travis Hunter package together, you know, just for down the road. But there are teams, this is a strange thing about Travis Hunter, the guy he gets compared to quite a bit, because both won the Heisman and both played not, you know, the analogy I'm going to make, not nearly as much as Travis Hunter literally played both ways full time. Charles Woodson did some things with Michigan. I think that helped him win the Heisman over Peyton Manning back in the day, was played for a national championship team in Michigan, was an elite defensive back who did some returning and played on offense some. But Charles Woodson knew he was going into the NFL as a defensive back. He was going to be a corner. Travis Hunter, there are teams reportedly that like him more as a wide receiver or see him more as a wide receiver on their team than they do a cornerback right now. So he literally, depending on who he gets picked by, does not yet know what position he's going to be primarily.
It's kind of, God, it's got to be fun to be that athletic.
I think it's cool.
It's really, I'm in a position too where I personally, it's hard for me to envision a guy playing 115 snaps a game in the NFL. And yet, I also live in an era where Shohei Ohtani has done something that nobody's done since Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to sit here and say it's impossible.
Right.
I'm just saying if he does do it, it will be, it's going to be so much more impressive than I think most people will even grasp. Because go back and watch games from back when guys used to play both sides of the ball. Like, and I played both sides of the ball in high school, and it was freaking miserable. But like, you go back to the old NFL games, guys were playing both sides of the ball. All right, you know what you see a lot of on defense? Lazy play, like compared to what you expect from today's players.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the old highlight reels of running backs from back in the day, it was like, oh, that safety decided to start running towards the running back once he got 10 yards past the line of scrimmage. Like, it's just, it's physiologically really tough to pull off.
Yeah.
So if he can do it, I'm going to be blown away. It'll be impressive. I think the over-under, for me, the over-under on how many snaps he takes on the opposite side of the ball of his main position, mm-hmm. his rookie year, would be...
Like total, you're talking total snaps for the season, you're saying.
For the okay, so I'm saying if he's a defensive, if he's a cornerback for whichever team drafts him, how many plays does he play on offense per game? And vice versa, if a team drafts him as a wide receiver, how many plays does he play as a defensive back per game?
I think if he gets drafted as a wide receiver, he probably plays. It feels more like to me, there's a better chance he gets drafted as a corner and has a wide receiver package. It feels weird to have a package of cornerback plays, you know?
Like, all right, well, except that you do mix and match. You know, you shuffle in corner defensive backs throughout. So you could come in and play nickelback or something.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. No, that's true. Like, right, he could be a dime back.
Let's say he gets drafted as a corner. How many plays per game do you think he drafts plays on offense?
I'll put the over-under at 4.5 plays per game.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's in anything more, if you played 10 or 15 snaps a game as a wide receiver, as a rookie, that would be really impressive.
Yeah.
I think I would take the over. I think that's a good number you put out, and I think I might take the over.
I could see that. Now if he – that's an interesting thing about the being a full-time wide receiver and going the other way, because we just haven't heard people talk about that. There's so many – it seems like the vast majority of teams view him as the other way. Full-time corner – part-time wide receiver. The wide receiver part-time corner thing is interesting because he could be your dime back. You know, you're just here's the package you're part of defensively.
Yeah.
And I think he might wind up playing more snaps if that's how they viewed him than he would play at wide receiver. You know, like a lot of teams wind up in dime on 3rd and 11 or whatever, you know?
Yeah, they might, you know, look at him as a guy that can blitz or do whatever, do some creative things with him.
Yeah.
While he's out there. So, but you're right. Because there's a lot of, there's so much recognition that goes into playing defensive back that if you're not out there getting all the reps and everything.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think too, you're more inclined to have a package guy on offense because you control whether or not he's a prominent guy that's part of that play. Like, there's no package you have, like, we got to get – the package is you're our dime back, and if the other team is throwing the ball 50 times in this game, you might play 25 snaps on defense. You know, you don't have control over that. The other team does. So
Yeah.
It's interesting.
So the over-under is going to be higher on number of snaps if he's drafted on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, I would.
Drafted as a wide receiver.
I would. Yeah. If they're inclined to play him at corner at all, I think he's part of part of a package there that you just play when the other team is in passing situations, that kind of thing.
It's weird because I'm glad you brought that up that way, because I think some of the conventional wisdom is that, well, listen, there's a lot if he gets drafted as a defensive back, there's a lot that goes into learning how to be an NFL wide receiver. So you want him to focus on defense. That's the conventional wisdom, but the same logic holds up on the other side too.
Yeah.
And maybe even more so than I was thinking in my brain. Good job, Sean.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Here's Nick Caserio. After we just got done doing some anonymous executive quotes a couple segments ago, Nick Caserio's thoughts on lying season and Execanon.
The old anonymous quote season.
Yes.
This is where we are.
Yeah. We lean into this,
Is it pretty much guaranteed that the guy who says he's the 8th best defensive tackle in the draft actually really wants to draft Kenneth Grant?
Yeah.
This is a massive amount of BS season. That's what this is. So I would say they're both good. They're both good football players. And when you watch the Michigan defense, you're not just watching one player. They play next to each other. So you can watch them during the course of the game. They're both really good players. They both have some things that they do well. They have some areas that they can certainly improve, but they're both good football players, and you know they're going to probably have a positive impact on whichever team drafts them next season.
That was you could tell at the end there, the genesis of that question from Seth was about trying to extract some scouting information from Nick on one of your favorites, Kenneth Grant.
Grant. So he's talking about Kenneth Grant and Mason Graham, who's a more highly regarded prospect, who's probably going to go in the top 10 as a defensive tackle. I referenced one of the quotes where one anonymous scout said he actually thinks Kenneth Grant is better than Mason Graham. But I got nothing out of Nick about that. So he thinks they're both good players, and they're going to help whichever team drafts them.
Well, that
He gave me nothing.
We Nick was open to talking about specific players at the end there. I don't think he's ever going to give a scouting report on a player where he talks about deficiencies in a guy's game.
Yeah.
I just don't get that sense. The Travis Hunter one was interesting, though. That was, I'm glad you asked that question, because he comes from, we have a texter point this out. Troy Brown was actually a guy with the Patriots who was a wide receiver by trade, who Belichick did use with Nick Caserio in the building. Right. Belichick did use on defense from time to time, you know.
Yeah.
So it's happened before. It's happened.
We got an anonymous quote from the son or the child of one of our listeners that we'll read next in the next segment that made me laugh so hard yesterday. I was searching. I'll explain coming up next, but this is from the son of one of our listeners, and it's the hardest I've laughed while sitting alone in a room in a while.
I can't wait to hear this. All right, and we will get you Cougs ready for the Final Four. Brendan Haywood was on with us yesterday, had some really cool things to say about U of H, and he gave his five reasons to hate Duke. We gave you our five earlier. We're going to give you a bonus dosage of five reasons I hate you, Duke style, coming up next.
From the Mokarum Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
You got to love to play defense if you're going to be part of Houston's program. He requires that. There's a certain level of toughness. You know, he wants his guys to be tough. And when you watch Houston play, you see physicality, toughness, defensive intensity every single year. The names change, but the style stays the same, and they're going to need that style if they're taking on, if they're going to be able to beat these Duke Blue Devils, because this Duke team is incredible.
All right, that was Brendan Haywood, former NBA center, former North Carolina Tar Heel. He said yesterday at the outset of our interview with him, he joined us yesterday on the show, that he is a fellow Coug basically this weekend, because as a Tar Heel, he's required to hate Duke. We'll hear the reasons why he hates Duke so much in just a second as we get you ready for the Final Four. You can hear it right here on Sports Radio 610. We'll circle back to Brendan Haywood in a minute. Seth, you had a good tease. So
So yesterday, usually as a rule, you should never search your own name on Twitter. I do it in very specific instances. What I did yesterday was I searched Payne and Pendergast, because a lot of times after we do an interview with Caserio or somebody else, I like to see what the scuttlebutt is, or whether people are responding to it or whatever, you know. So I did a Payne and Pendergast search real quickly, and I stumbled into this from October 28th of 2023. And to be clear, before I say anything else, Sean, you and I have never delved into Middle Eastern politics or affairs or anything on this show.
Or any politics, yeah.
That's very much the point of this tweet from this kid's script on Twitter. He says, "My dad just told me I shouldn't be against Israel because it's anti-Semitic. Brother, you get your news info from Payne and Pendergast."
And that's awesome. Okay. So
his point was that whoever he was responding to, he said this guy never pays attention to the news. Basically, he listens to Payne and Pendergast all the time, and now he's telling me what my views on Israel should be.
On politics.
So, yeah.
That's hilarious.
So listen, I'm not weighing in on anybody's position for any of that, other than I like that in this kid's household, he's using us as evidence that his father doesn't know what the hell he's talking about.
This is one of those old school families where the family sits down to dinner every night. That this kid who's tweeting is one of like four kids of various ages. Mom sits at one end of the table.
Yeah.
Father sits at the other long end. And current events come up quite frequently at the table. And the old man, sleeves rolled up, tie still on from his hard day at work, with a beer on the table, says, "I wouldn't be hearing any of this malarkey from you if you just listened to Payne and Pendergast like I do every day, all right?"
Yeah, or the kid is just like, "You get your news from Payne and Pendergast. Right. I'm supposed to respect your opinion."
My favorite thing about that is that means that this kid is probably in the car every day with the old man, or was, you know, I don't know how old he is now, but we get a lot of, you know, we got a lot of listeners that are driving their kids to school every day, you know, so that's, I like that at least the earworm is embedded in this kid's brain, Payne and Pendergast. It wasn't, Seth, it wasn't, you get your opinions from sports talk radio. It was, you get your opinions from Payne and Pendergast. I like that.
So if anybody out there listening is the father of this, this kid, I just,
please text.
Thanks for listening.
Please text.
To the exclusion of actual other news.
If you,
thank you.
If it's you, if it's, If it's you, I want to take you and your kid to lunch. I want to go. I want to.
Yeah, so we can really hash out this Israel thing.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll figure it out. Yeah. We'll fix it. Probably take about 45 minutes.
The only reason it hasn't been fixed is because Seth and I haven't gotten to sink our meat hooks into it yet. But yeah.
Yeah, no, it's really it's one of the things I feel most guilty about. Right. Is that I could easily solve all these world affairs and issues.
Yep.
You guys got questions about tariffs? Old Sethers. He'll set you straight.
You had a funny comment about tariffs yesterday, but it was about the tush push.
That's oh, they're trying to put a tariff on Jalen Hurts.
That was really funny. That made me laugh.
I ended up reading like 2 hours on tariffs yesterday.
That sounds delightful.
It was a blast. It was like anything else in life. It's always more complicated than every. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So. You will not get your tariff news on Payne and Pendergast.
No, God, no. God, no. The more I ever read or delve into news topics, I realize, like, okay, I can't possibly add anything to the discourse here.
And it's the fallout of it, too. It's all the blowback.
Right, no. Yeah. Just so I can, please, let me say something for 10 minutes so somebody can grab a half of a sentence and blow it up all over social media.
You have informed opinions. It's the blowback. Yeah. Not like
that is my favorite thing. One of my favorite things, my least favorite things on social media is when somebody will show a clip of a public figure talking about a hot button topic for like 30 seconds. Yeah. And it's obviously part of a longer interview.
Oh, yeah.
And the comment will be like, oh, interesting that he didn't bring up this other part of the topic.
Brought it up either before or after. All right.
Yeah.
Back to Brendan Haywood. What's the formula? What's the game plan if the Cougs are going to take down the Duke Blue Devils?
Do what we do. Because what we do is how the way that they play is the best way to beat Duke. We don't want to get into a track meet with these guys. They have better athletes. We want to slow it down. We want to make the game ugly and play defensive. We want this game played in the 60s. We want it to be just like the Purdue game. We want it to be 62-60. Mm-hmm. You want that game played at that type of pace, physical hand-to-hand combat. We're going to pressure these guys. You got to pressure Cooper Flagg. Pressure him. You got to pressure Conklin Upland. You got to get up into their space. Make them uncomfortable. And Houston is probably the best team in the Final Four at making people uncomfortable.
Duke has not played a top 15 defensive team since December. And that's what's gone into my take is Duke has just not seen any team defensively like this. They've seen good teams, but nobody defensively like this one that they're going to see on Saturday. I love the Cougs plus 4.5.
Yeah, and it's not like they'll be unprepared for it or anything. But I think the thing about a Kelvin Sampson team and this team in particular is I have no fear or doubt that they're somehow going to not play their game. Like everything that Byron just said is 100% how I expect them to play. Mm-hmm. That they do what they do, and they're not going to get the moment's not going to be too big for them or anything to where all of a sudden they forget what got them to where they are. And I think it will be played in the 60s. It's just a matter of, okay, when it comes down to that final 3 or 4 minutes, really, who breaks first?
Yeah, well, and they got shot makers too. Yeah. Houston does, between Uzan and Sharp and LJ Cryer, they've got guys that can knock down shots late in game. So we'll see what happens. So Brendan Haywood, we also asked him to do a 5 Reasons I Hate You for Duke. We just did one earlier. There was 5 completely different reasons than the 5 that you're about to hear from Brendan Haywood, former North Carolina Tar Heel and noted Duke hater. Brendan, take it away.
Sean and I do a little fun. It's a fun segment called 5 Reasons That I Hate You that we'll do about opponents' teams. And we've never done one for Duke before. And right now the problem is we've got two.
Well, I got more than five.
Good. Oh, good. I was hoping to get one out of you, but I was like, okay, we got all the standard ones from various people. give us a few from a unique perspective of a Tar Heel, a guy who played for UNC. Exactly, some reasons to hate Duke.
Okay, first of all, for my perspective, first and foremost, reason I hate Duke, number one, Grant Hill's been unruly in the group chat this year. I need him to go to sleep. I'm tired of him texting the group chat talking crazy. I need him to get out of here. Reason number two, why I hate the Duke Blue Devils. I don't like their fan base. Never have, never will. Always thought they were arrogant. Reason number three, I played way back in the day against Shane Battier, and I thought that he embodied that arrogance that I talked about with the fan base. So every time I see Duke play, I just see Shane Battier's face. Great guy, just never liked him in that space. He's a very good person. I'll say that again, very good person. Never liked him in that space. Other reasons why not to like Duke. You know what? Never liked Coach K. I know he's not there anymore, but I don't even want the ghost of Coach K's spirit in this tournament to feel good about where Duke is right now. I like the way that Carolina sent him off to retirement a few years ago. My last reason not to like Duke is simply I don't like that shade of blue. Okay, the light shade of blue is the blue that you need. That dark blue, get that out of here, okay? Yes. We don't need any of that. All right, you need that light blue in your life, okay?
That's a great job by Haywood to come up with five off the cuff like that.
At the ready, man, he did not pause at all. He was ready to go. The one big thing to remember about the ghost of Coach K is that you'll recall when Mike Krzyzewski talked down to Dylan Brooks after Duke got beat by Dylan Brooks. Dylan Brooks had hit a three at the end of the game.
Dylan Brooks played for Oregon in college.
Oregon beat Duke.
Yeah.
And Krzyzewski said something to Dylan Brooks.
Yes.
As they were shaking hands at the end.
Yeah.
And Dylan Brooks kind of went off about it or said something about it. Coach K said in the press conference, no, I was just giving him encouragement, and then later admitted that what he had said was, you're too good a player to do that. You're too good of a player. Because Dylan Brooks had stared down the player after he hit that three late in the game.
Yeah. I remember that. And that might be my biggest glitch with Coach K. Coach K was by far my favorite reason to hate Duke that Brendan Haywood brought up in that clip we just played.
Yeah,
that's my least favorite, and I'm serious about this. And he would do this a lot, where he would walk up to players, Coach K would, on other teams, and give them advice or kind of like, when I say advice, I don't even mean productive advice. I'm talking about like telling them how to conduct their business. And that gives me a real feel like when somebody else tries to parent your kid, you know,
you know
that's what that was for me. That's a big thing for me. Like, no, these are my kids. I'll parent them. You don't need to tell them what to do in these situations. That annoys me in general, and it definitely annoys me about that rat-faced worm, Coach K, for sure.
The wannabe Yoda is what he is, damn it.
Yeah.
Who's the other guy that reminded us of Yoda that annoys you?
I'm trying to remember. He's made a lot of Yoda jokes about it. God, who was it? It was a college basketball coach. Was it Tom Izzo? Was it?
No.
It was one of them.
No.
I can't remember who. Rick Pitino? I don't know.
It wasn't a college basketball coach.
Okay.
One of our listeners will remember.
Yeah, they'll remember. Text in.
Or that kid who hates his father.
Yeah. Can y'all stop talking about this sports crap? Text message. I tune into Payne and Pendergast for world news and social news. Can you guys give us an update on the Ukraine-Russia war?
Oh, my gosh.
Well, this comes from Seth. You still have the tweet in front of you that we shared?
This tweet, Lopez. I was trying to find some Payne. I searched Payne and Pendergast yesterday, and I stumbled into this tweet from a kid last year who said, "My dad just told me I shouldn't be against Israel because it's anti-Semitic. Brother, you get your news info from Payne and Pendergast," which wasn't anything to do with anything Sean or I said about Israel. It was more that he's saying his dad doesn't actually know anything about world affairs. He listens to Payne and Pendergast. We almost never talk about world affairs.
Yeah. I will say this, and this is the hand of God.
Yeah.
I get 95% of my business news riding the elevator in this building.
Oh, that little
little screen?
The little screen they have in the elevator is very useful. The only thing, like yesterday, it caused major anxiety. That's how much the stock market dropped today.
Yeah.
Ooh, haven't seen a number like that
this morning
before.
The job issues didn't drop as much as they thought in March.
Okay.
So I can have that conversation.
Is the market back up today at all?
No,
or is
the
it
market's
down?
Not back up.
That's cute for those of you that actually have good investments in your 401k.
I don't even know if I have that. That's why I needed
all my business
up.
News I get from the elevator.
Yeah. No, it's true. I'll oftentimes stand in there and wait till the article. Wait till I'm done with the article.
Too.
Yeah. How you doing, Reggie?
Doing all right. Doing okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Excited for basketball.
Ready,
man.
For the Final Four, baby.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Dean M. Leeson, right?
Yeah, my computer screen and my computer died.
All good.
But I will shout out D&M Leasing.
That's right.
Yeah, Crosstalk. It's brought to you by D&M Leasing each and every day on this station. Thank you for that. What is the question of the day, gentlemen?
All right, so
I know you were weighing two of them up before.
Yeah. And we'll talk to Chancellor Johnson, who is in San Antonio covering this thing at 10:40.
Oh, cool.
So I was like, all right, maybe I don't lean so heavily into, like, let's just get into the Duke of it all again. But question of the day, if you are to have the best day in Houston, what's one thing that's going to be vital to doing that?
Weather below 75 degrees, I would
below
say.
Below 75?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, below 75.
I don't know, I've been enjoying the hell out of this weather the last couple of weeks. See, this is how I know, like, this, and I'm not trying to big up you or big dog you or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm true to this, baby. Like, yeah. I remember playing basketball in 100-degree weather with some jeans
on.
See,
I didn't grow up in it.
Yeah,
you know?
When
with jeans on.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I was a kid. We
like
were
in the playground and stuff. Yeah,
out front of the house. But yeah, like, I remember, because I spent a year at Kansas State University.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was one time where
a little chilly.
I was like, man, and it wasn't even when it was chilly. It was just like the air is really thin.
Yeah.
And then it rained, and I was like, oh, I can breathe. Like, that's how much I realized that I enjoy the kind of the humidity here.
But we're talking like just even like if you're going to spend a day,
food or
like
activities.
8 a.m. till 9 p.m. or whatever, what's crucial?
Crucial, okay.
Crucial
to do. Do you have a good one, Seth? Do you have a crucial thing for spending a quality day in Houston, Texas?
Okay. Sorry, I got hung up on the weather part.
Yeah,
that's the biggest.
Well, I will tell you, like certainly, you know, breakfast, you know, there's so many great breakfast places.
Oh,
and I feel bad because my very first thought is not one that you go, oh man, like this great restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, gotta have a kolache, man.
Okay, kolache's good.
Just gotta have a kolache.
Kolache's good. I would say breakfast at Avalon Diner for me.
It could be any one of them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, some Mexican food breakfast.
Yeah,
some,
Avalon
Diner.
That's something I look forward to the night before.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to get up and I'm going to go eat breakfast over there. I like Sunday, Saturday, especially weekend mornings.
And I'm a big advocate of, hopefully the weather's not too hot, of like Buffalo Bayou Trail, Heights Trail.
Yeah.
Get on some trail somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's where I get. I'm with you, John. Ideally, I can take a walk in the weather's comfortable, at the very least before the sun comes up.
Right.
As long as the weather's comfortable at like 5:30 a.m., I'm really, really happy if I just get out and can take a walk.
Those trails here are just so good.
Yeah, we got good trails.
Everywhere.
Yeah, we got good trails. Well, you'll get some good answers on that one.
Can I do something real quick, though?
Of course.
I need to steal a couple minutes from you guys if you're okay with it.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so we're going to start the show with this question that I've been kind of pondering, and I really want you guys' expertise to add in before we get into it.
Hope it's not about current events.
It is not.
Okay.
It is not. Unless you consider the current events of how you build the Houston Texans. How do you get the most out of this tight end position coming up this season?
If it's these guys?
Yes.
If it's these three guys. Because there's three that I count, right?
Right.
Schultz, Stover, and Brevin Jordan.
Correct.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking about it, and it feels like this might be a more run-heavy team than previously. And I don't know that you got the guys to be, like, inline blockers or what have you. Like, I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's going to have to come down to Cade Stover really developing as a blocker.
Mm-hmm.
And that, so that you can offset that with a little bit of, okay, that Dalton Schultz is still a good receiving option. You just got to be sure you're not depending on him as a blocker. And then using Brevin Jordan creatively.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there's nothing right now that gets me excited about
it.
Right. I do think there's some things they did in terms of pass protection last year that made it even more difficult for Dalton Schultz to disguise some of his blemishes and flaws. So I really just hope that by Kaylee hopefully having a better feel for protections and CJ being involved with the protections, that they can limit some of the downside of Dalton Schultz or Brevin. Like, Brevin Jordan is a willing blocker, but he's just physically, anatomically not quite up to it. A lot of it has to do with Cade Stover coming along and developing.
If I had to guess, I would guess that on plays that involved a tight end, one tight end, two tight end, whatever, Dalton Schultz was on the field for a vast majority of those plays last year. Yeah. So if I had to guess, it was interesting. I had this question asked in the mailbag for the Utopia podcast. Who do you think plays more snaps this coming year, Dalton Schultz or Cade Stover? And on the surface, I'm like, well, that's silly. Like, Cade Stover's a second-year guy who's only going into his fourth year. even playing tight end.
Yeah.
He was a defensive end when he got to Ohio State. Of course it's Schultz. But then you take a step back and you think, all right, well, we don't know what this offense is going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And if Nick Caley is going to run the football a lot more, I think it's almost – I do think we're not going to see Dalton Schultz put in some of the positions he was put in last year to have to do things he's not good at, which means he won't be on the field as much.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. So the answer to your question, Reggie, might be it involves less Dalton Schultz, to Seth's point, a developing Cade Stover.
Mm-hmm.
And then Brevin Jordan is just sort of this weapon X that sits off to the side.
Right.
For me, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
It's an intriguing room.
It is.
And yet I could see them drafting a tight end with one
that's
of their,
where I was going.
And that's the additional level of this that we're going to get into here in a second.
Yeah, man. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Well, I'll be listening.
Thanks,
excited.
Man.
Yeah, for
Otherwise,
sure.
Otherwise, you were like, I'm out of here, dog.
Yeah, no, I needed good
Screw
tight end
guys.
Talk. Yeah, tight end and current events because I get all my news from In the Loop.
Yeah.
John Lopez.
That's not going to help you
Adetula.
At all.
All right, Seth, have a good weekend, my friend. Have fun watching draft day.
Yes, antibodies, and I look forward to solving healthcare next week with you.
All right.
I can't wait. Yeah. Brace yourself,
Where you
kid.
Come to for Pain and Pendergast healthcare discussion.
Good Medicaid talk. We'll have some good Medicaid guests on Monday. All right, we're done. We're out of time.